Welcome to Euractiv's Tech Podcast. I am Elisa Grizzi, Tech Editor in Brussels. Today, we are looking at tech and migration, not only in the Migration Pact, but also specifically with regards to Eurodac, a measure to expand a fingerprint database to include more information about migrants and asylum seekers. This is Euractiv's Tech Brief Podcast. We're joined by Caterina Rodelli, who analyzes technology and migration policy for NGO Access Now. Caterina, can you walk us through the changes that happened in the past weeks in regards to tech and migration policy?
So last week, the European Parliament adopted the new Pact on Migration and Asylum, which is a set of reforms about migration and asylum law. This package has been under discussion for many, many years and it raised a lot of criticism by human rights organizations because it really, really normalizes the punitive approach that the European Union has against people arriving irregularly and people who apply for asylum and also undocumented migrants who reside already on the European Union territory. The pact changes the asylum law on a number of ways, but in particular, and the reason why we're here today, is that it ushers in a new era of digital surveillance. And I'm saying this because the pact, which again is made by a number of new laws, all of them include different ways of digital surveillance, new technological systems to assist authorities in the immigration and asylum procedures, and a wide range of other technological systems. Eurodac is just one of these reforms. Eurodac, since the beginning, it was a database to collect fingerprint data and information about people who just entered the European Union and were applying to asylum. And the purpose of it was to support member states to take responsibility of the asylum claim, but also collect information about people to, in the case of a negative decision on their asylum claim, enforce deportation. What happened with Eurodac is that its scope was widened extremely. So right now, what it will be with Eurodac is that every person who's found irregularly on the territory, every person who changes their immigration status, being that they have been resettled, relocated to another member state, they will have their biometric data taken, not fingerprints anymore, but also facial images. This information will be retained for a period of 10 years. Information will be taken also from kids from the age of 6 before it was 14. And information will be made accessible to law enforcement authorities to a certain degree. And also Eurodac is one of the migration databases which is part of the interoperability system. So information that are gathered in Eurodac can be cross-checked against a number of other databases that contain other type of information. And this will expand the status of mass surveillance that the European Union is establishing against non-European citizens, because it will make it possible to check at every moment, at every stage, for a period of 10 years, who people are, where they have been, and decide on their future.
We are also joined by MEP Jorge Buxade Villalba, the rapporteur for the Eurodac regulation. The two interviews were recorded separately. My first question is, what is so special about Eurodac?
Well, Eurodac is just the first step in the right direction, a starting point to all the good measures we must take to protect and to defend Europe from illegal migration. The fundamental question is what we want with asylum and migration rules. Do we want, as the left pretends, to allow everyone to come in and then force a good and a strong narrative so that voters don't get angry? Or on the contrary, what we want to ensure is an area of freedom, security, justice in Europe. Eurodac is a fundamental piece. It's a good database about all the data of the illegal migrants or the solicitors of asylum, international protection.
Mm-hmm. So can you tell me exactly what does it do, like, and how does it change what we have? I mean, Eurodac is an old thing in itself, but I'm aware there's been some changes. So could you walk us through exactly how it will achieve these goals?
This database is centralized, and all the authorities in Europe will have access to this information to coordinate, to cooperate in all the issues about the migration, about the asylum, for avoid the fraud, for example, when people is arriving in Spain and they ask asylum in Spain, but they are going after they go to Germany, and in Germany they ask another time asylum. We have to avoid this fraud, this system, and the authorities in Germany, they will have information that these people are asking asylum in Spain, and Spain is responsible, and so on.
Mm-hmm. And also, you mentioned it's the first step. What do you think the second steps will be?
I think is the first step, because in all this package of the Asylum and Migration Pact, we don't have a very important piece, that is the reform of the Directive of Return. We need to guarantee that all the orders of return of the illegal migrants adopted by European authorities will be efficient, and we have to improve the system in the next legislature with a new majority in the European Parliament, with a new majority in the Council, and it's very important. I live in Spain. We are suffering impressive numbers of illegal migrants. We don't know where they are, what they are doing, and if they don't have right to be in Europe, they have to come to these countries of origin.
We're talking a really big expansion of the data collected on these people. And it's interesting to me that you mention illegal migrants, because some of them are essentially later legalized, right? If they're like allowed into Europe, whether on an asylum or an immigration status. But are you concerned at all about the collection of these massive amounts of data? Especially with regards to children, vulnerable groups, and so on. And do you think there is a limit to this data? Do you think we need to set some boundaries?
I am not concerned, because we will obtain this data in the border control. That it is another rule that we passed in the last week in Brussels, and it's a procedure control with all the rights recognized in the international pacts and all and the conventions, and it's a false narrative that the left and the NGOs are doing about Eurodac. All the data we will obtain directly from the migrant.
Mm-hmm. So, but what is the narrative exactly that...
That they say that Eurodac is a rule that will... that it will destroy the rights of the migrants. Or it is not true. I have my card, my ID card. I have my ID card in the European Parliament. I have my ID card in Spain. Why? The migrants, the illegal migrants, have to be without control. This is only to assure the equality between the European people and the illegal migrants.
Mm-hmm. Is there the possibility of more extensive data collection, though, than what there is right now for EU citizens? For example, one of the things I saw discussed is the possibility of data being collected from people's mobile phones.
No.
Which, of course, are no?
No, this is not the question. The question is, but the reality, what is the reality? The reality is, in Spain, for example, in Canarias, every week is arriving a boat with 40 or 35 migrants, illegal migrants, that they come paying with to the mafia. When they arrive to Spain, we don't have any information about them. And we need to have this information. We have to identify name, surname, facial image, fingerprints, if they have passport, they have ID card from their country, and this information is put in a database with all the European authorities. It's only that. But if they arrive with a knife, with a weapon, and they arrive fighting with others in the center of internal, no, in the center of in Canarias, we have to put a security flag, because all the authorities in Europe must have this information. This is the question. It's only to organize, to identify. It's not about mobile phones, about other systems. It's only the work that the police, that the authorities, the administrative authorities, that Frontex in the borders where they are doing their mm-hmm. job, that they collect information, they collect the data, put in the database, and it's only this.
But Mr. Buxella, where does this sort of end? Because the threats to European citizens that might come from these migrants, they're not always something that they carry with them, right? Like, a lot of radicalization happens within Europe. So are we going to be surveilling these people throughout their entire lives? And what about the moment when perhaps they become naturalized citizens?
No. It's not a question about surveillance. It's a question, administrative questions. We have to know who they are, their complete information about his person, and if they ask for asylum or a permit of residence, and we have to have this information, because if they don't have any right to be in Europe, they have to go to mm-hmm. come back to their countries. This is our law. This is the European law. They don't have any right to be in Europe. They don't have any right. They have only rights if they comply our laws.
Coming back to you, Katerina, Mr. Buxade, that I was talking to earlier, he thinks that this is not a surveillance measure. He thinks that this is just an administrative measure to just make sure that authorities have the data that they need. Why do you think it is surveillance? Where is the line between the two?
I think that's an interesting remark and an easy way to understand why human rights organizations such as Access Now, but also other partner organizations, describe Eurodac as a mean of mass surveillance, is that if you take the text of Eurodac and you check it against the GDPR, you will find the measures inconsistent with European regulation on data protection and privacy. Many of the measures that are foreseen in Eurodac, in fact, would be considered against data protection and privacy safeguards. Let's take, for example, the collection and processing of biometric data for the purpose of identification is considered to be a ban practice unless in certain circumstances, according to Article 9 of the GDPR. And these circumstances that are listed in GDPR do not necessarily match with the situation we have at hand. Also, the situation of children. Children from the age of 6 will have their biometric data taken. This is against the GDPR. And these and many other type of data processing that are regulated by the GDPR, in fact, are violated by Eurodac. The reason why we describe this as a form of mass surveillance is that Eurodac will have the potential to retain data about millions of people, make them accessible to law enforcement authorities and other migration authorities, with the purpose of identifying people, and also with the capacity to use this type of information to then detain them or deport them. So people that are entering the European Union and passing through Eurodac will be constantly surveilled. Authorities will always know where they've come from and will have the possibility to follow them throughout the years. So if this is not mass surveillance, I don't know what else it would be.
I guess the argument from the other side, Kate, is that these people don't have the right to be in Europe, and they come here and they ask to be here, and therefore surveillance is maybe okay for the purposes of security. If we accept the premise that we need to secure the borders and we need to secure Europe from these migrants and asylum seekers, why should we prioritize privacy above that?
Let me say that I don't think the fact that there is a premise is that the security of borders should be above non-European rights is an accepted premise for everyone. So the right to privacy is a fundamental right according to the Charter of the European of Fundamental Rights of the European Union. According to this charter, there is not written anywhere that people have different access to their fundamental rights depending on where they come from. The right to seek asylum is also a fundamental right. So people that come and seek for asylum are actually exercising their fundamental right to seek asylum. So again, we have two type of rights, the right to privacy, the right to seek asylum, that are fundamental rights according to the European Charter on Fundamental Rights, which is the basis of EU policymaking. The fact that the European Union has invested a lot of time and resources in the last year to construct the idea that there is a risk, the European Union is at risk and the borders are the perimeter that we should guard in order to prevent these risks to come in and to compromise the stability of the European Union, is a political construct that does not have any factual evidence. There are a lot of studies that prove the contrary on how migration actually has a positive impact on the economy, or many other things that are usually used in the political debate to actually say why we should protect our borders. But these are not taken into account when we are seeing European policymaking in the area of migration. Usually, this policymaking is based on anecdotal evidence. There is no evidence usually used to claim that we should secure our borders. And it always forgets the fact, which is should have been the beginning of my sentence, which is there are no regular pathways. There are no regular ways for people to actually arrive to the European Union. These are non-existent. People do not have access to a visa. Some countries do not even have the presence of European embassies. And European politicians often tend to forget this aspect. And they usually tend to use the argument that people do not have the right to enter or to stay, and they forget to allude to the fact that this right does not exist and arriving irregularly is the only way for people to seek safety.
Yes, but I guess from their perspective, from the moment you try to arrive irregularly, you put yourself in the sort of crossfires of border policies, right? Like once you cross the border illegally, you open yourself up to having your fingerprints taken, being sent back to your country, and so on.
Yes, but in the first place, people are seeking the right to seek asylum and protection. We can argue that this is not, but if we go down that route, we should just like be clear about that. We should just like scrap all the international human rights law, the Universal Declaration on Human Rights that was signed in 1948. We should just like be honest and just decide that some people deserve less rights than others, because this is actually what it all comes down to.
Mm-hmm. And particularly with regards to privacy.
Yes.
Do you think that to a certain extent, these tech measures are not only reactive, but also preemptive? Because I feel like right now we are at a point where security and defense are going to the top of the agenda. We still have very large numbers of asylum seekers and migrants arriving at European borders, but perhaps there is a longer term view that the number of these people will only increase as instability around the world increases with more security incidents, but also climate change. So do you think that this tech system, that these tech rails, they feel like the people, the MEPs and supporters of these tech measures, do you think they are trying to set the system in place preemptively for that? Or do you think it's simply a reactive measure, perhaps trying to win votes and say that we are protecting Europe?
Yeah, I think we can see from two different angles. So the first one is that it's reactive for what it is now. But again, as you said, this is going to get even more, because the European Union has a history of colonialism, of creating instability, of extracting resources, and being one of the main responsible for climate change. A lot of research has provided evidence that some parts of the world will just be inhabitable, and therefore it will lead to movements of people. The political instability is also linked with European Union history of colonialism and warfare. So for sure, there will be an increase in the number of people that will move across the world. And what would the technology do? Prevent something that is inevitable? Because like this will happen. Migration is happening. Migration has been happening for the history of humanity. And using technology to prevent something that is inevitable is like pretending not to see what it's like just in front of your eyes. So it's a dubious choice of use of public funding, because there could be investment and use of public funding that actually addresses other problems, that actually ensures that there is like an existing infrastructure that makes space for everyone, that takes into account what is the direction the world is going towards and does not do everything in order to oppose it. It's the same thing with climate change. Like politicians, instead of investing on sustainable way forward, they are just like, they keep stuck with what makes profit for them and is actually making climate change even worse. And it's the same thing with migration. It's just that leaders, because there are people in power and they want to preserve their power, they want to preserve the status quo of things. And the point of profiting is central also to the use of technology in the migration context. A lot of these responses are suggested by private sector and industry that has an interest in making border surveillance flourishing as a market, while at the same time being detached from the actual needs.
Is that something you saw specifically in the Migration Pact and Eurodac process?
Yes. I mean, for example, the Migration Pact builds on other legislations that have been approved in the area of migration policies. One of them is the interoperability regulation from 2019. That mandates the establishment of new databases for the collection of data, including also biometric data from every, not only asylum seeker, but every non-European citizen, and the interoperability of all of these databases and the exchange of information across the European Union. This solution is, some of these databases have not yet come into use. One example is the ATS database that would be used for travel authorization for visa holders and the entry access system. They are systems that are constantly being postponed. Their launch is being postponed over and over again. Why? Because there are no technical capabilities, because there are no, because the idea was pushed by the industry that would make profit from it. And we can see this just checking the history of EU-LISA roundtables with the industry. There is someone that is pushing for this type of solutions that is completely detached from the reality of things and what the actual needs are. And the PAC, Migration Pact, builds on these assumptions, builds on this history of European institutions' relationship with the private industry, of the power of the agency, such as EU-LISA or Frontex or Europol, and how they drive the political agenda. But again, they are all detached from what the actual needs are.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that you bring up the question of capacity, because this is also one. This was one of my questions to Mr. Buksale. Is there capacity to have Eurodac up and running anytime soon?
That's a good question, because there is no evidence in that sense. There is no report. I mean, substantial report, I mean, that can describe what is the capacity of national migration and law enforcement authorities to establish the database with this capacity and make it interoperable and accessible according to all the details of the Migration Pact and all the other EU legislative files that are linked to that, such as PRUM, for example, that is about exchange of data for cross-border investigations. And a number of the Schengen Borders Code is another piece of legislation that is connected to the pact. The newly proposed anti-smuggling package, facilitation package, they see a big role of Europol also. There is no evidence that European member states have the capacity to do all of the above. And actually, let me mention that the NGO Statewatch a couple of months ago published a document from the Council that was commenting the Commission proposal about the anti-smuggling package, and member states themselves were saying that the proposal was detached from reality, that would have brought an excessive workload for law enforcement authorities that they didn't have.
And back to Mr. Buksale. Do you think we have the capacity in European agencies to enforce such changes? A lot of what we have seen in the enforcement of tech regulation is a sort of slow enforcement, because the capacity of agencies at the EU and national level is still lacking.
The responsibility, the authorities responsible are the national authorities.
Mm-hmm.
And this information to organize the database is clear. We have to do some investments for the Commission, in the European Commission, have to invest in this new database. And the European agencies have to, they have access to this information to comply their mandate, to comply their obligations. And I think this is a good I don't have the word. It's a rule, a good tool for Frontex. It's a good tool for EASO and for all the European agencies and all the national authorities.
Mm-hmm. But within the national authorities, there's like a pretty big discrepancy as to their capacity. And do you think, are you hopeful? Do you think that the investment needed from the Commission will come into these measures? Given,
I hope. It's my wish. They mm-hmm. invest, because security in the borders, security, internal security, it's a big issue for many Europeans. I mm-hmm. don't know any European is not concerned about security and the migration in Europe. Anybody.
One last question for you, Kate. So a lot of EU migration policy is somewhat outsourcing the border control to third countries, whether that's Turkey, whether it's Morocco, whether it's Libya. Is there a concern that, say, all of this facial recognition, fingerprints taking, if all of this actually comes to fruition in a realistic way, is there a concern about having that technology in the hands of these third countries, either from an abuse perspective or something else?
Yes. There are concerns, and this is already existent. Organizations such as Privacy International have already uncovered how the European Union has invested on the creation of biometric databases in third countries such as Senegal, but also countries that are applying for the annexion for accessing the European Union, such as Bosnia or Serbia, for building biometric databases to both collect information about their citizens, such as the case of Senegal, or to collect information about migrant peoples, such as it is in the case of Serbia and Bosnia, to then make these databases accessible to the European Union, to be in order to be capable of, you know, always knowing where people are coming from, where they've passed, to have this capacity. This is mass surveillance. Like, you are, the European Union will be able to have like a complete history of people worldwide and have exchange of biometric data across the globe. So this is one reality of things already, but then also the European Union has been equipping countries with authoritarian governments, such as like in Libya, with border surveillance technologies to enforce their externalization policies. So there are like a number of millions, like there are millions of euros spent in Libya, for example, to make sure that the so-called Libyan Coast Guard is able to pull people back or even impede them for leaving. Money to be spent in detention centers, where Amnesty International has reported on a number of times that tortures and other like abuses and degrading treatments take place. So this is already happening.
I think that's all we have time for this week. Thank you so much for joining me. Don't forget to sign up to our free Tech Brief newsletter to stay on top of tech news and digital policy developments in the European Union and beyond. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast if you like it, which is published on all your usual podcast platforms. I am Eliza Grizzi. Thank you for listening.
As part of our commitment to accuracy, inclusion, and transparency, Euractiv is part of the Trust Project.